from the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio. This is Deconstructing Dinner.
And welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, produced in the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio in Nelson, British Columbia. My name's John Steinman. Here on Deconstructing Dinner, we dissect our daily food choices and discuss the impacts that these choices have on ourselves, our communities, and the planet. To find out more info on previous broadcasts or to comment on the content of this program, you can visit the program's website at www.cjly.net/deconstructingdinner. The issues surrounding hog production are seemingly endless, but yet another issue is that of manure and urine disposal. When thousands of hogs are placed in such confined spaces, the buildup of waste is immense. Even a small farm with only 1,000 hogs can produce over 6 million pounds of waste each year. Now, as is commonly understood, manure is an excellent fertilizer, but when pigs are being fed the incredible amount of drugs, as mentioned earlier, along with a significant amount of metals that are being added to their feed to promote growth, manure does not seem to be such an ideal choice of fertilizer anymore. For those of us perhaps living in cities, the effects of manure being disposed of into the environment may not be so apparent. But when we walk into the grocery store and buy a stick of salami, well, this purchase becomes very connected to the rural communities living in the vicinity of these hog factories. And my next guest on Deconstructing Dinner is Elaine Hughes, the coordinator for the Stop the Hogs Coalition. Elaine lives in Archerville, Saskatchewan, about halfway between Saskatoon and the Manitoba border. And Elaine sits on the steering committee for the Beyond Factory Farming Coalition. Elaine has firsthand knowledge of how manure and waste from hog factories affects rural communities and helped form the Stop the Hogs Coalition a few years ago in response to a proposed 5,000-unit factory within her rural municipality. And I spoke with Elaine from her home in Archerville, and she explains where all the manure and waste from these hog factories goes.
It's being flushed into a creation they call a lagoon. We affectionately call them cesspools, and from there it is spread onto our pastures and our fields repeatedly as long as that barn is in existence. First it's mixed with, for this 5,000 sow unit that I was just describing, that operation would use about 50 million gallons of water a year, and that's not for the animals to drink necessarily. That most of it goes to flushing the manure out of the barns into this cesspool to make it so they can handle it. They are a big hole in the ground the size of 2 or 3 football fields, supposedly with this packed clay bottom, which is supposed to prevent them from leaking, which is a myth. They all leak, whether they're made out of steel or cement or pounded clay or whatever.
Now, as was just mentioned, manure is commonly seen as an excellent fertilizer to apply to land being used to grow crops. But as Elaine explained, manure is only a good fertilizer if the composition of manure is in the right proportion.
Well, manure in reasonable quantities is an excellent fertilizer, and I'm all for using the natural products, but in proper proportions. And one of the problems with the hog manure is that the nitrogen and the phosphorus are usually out of proportion to what the plants need. There's either too much or too little of one or the other, and it's the excess of nitrogen and phosphorus that causes the problems, of course.
Now, Elaine recently compiled a fact sheet for the Beyond Factory Farming Coalition entitled Intensive Livestock Operations in Water. In it, she expanded on the composition of manure by listing these additional ingredients that are subsequently being applied onto fields growing our food. And they include human waste, hog carcasses, cleaning chemicals, insecticides, metals such as cadmium, zinc, nickel, lead, iron, manganese, boron, and copper, which are all added to hog food to promote growth and prevent disease, vaccines, subtherapeutic levels of antibiotics, antibiotic-resistant bacteria, parasites, and other bacterial and viral pathogens such as the now familiar Cryptosporidium, Salmonella, and E. coli. Now, manure doesn't sound so promising after knowing that, but here is an interesting tidbit of information and an illustration as to where our own federal government here in Canada stands on the issue of manure coming out of these intensive hog factories. On a website created by Industry Canada for use by children and students in school, they provide information on the hog industry, and there is one page titled Hogs and the Environment. And on this page reads the following, and I quote, "By definition, hog manure is neither toxic nor hazardous," end quote. But it continues on. and I quote, "Elements in hog manure do not present a public health risk because all compounds occur naturally," end quote. The interesting story behind this webpage produced by Industry Canada for school-age children is that almost all information comes from the United States, and amounts are even listed in gallons. Additionally, the source of these two quotes I just read comes from the National Pork Producers Council in the United States, and not even an environmentally grounded organization or department. If you're just tuning in, this is Deconstructing Dinner, where we're hearing clips from my conversation with Elaine Hughes of the Saskatchewan-based Stop the Hogs Coalition. Continuing on the topic of applying liquid manure from hog factories onto fields, these fields are commonly linked to sources of water, whether they be groundwater or surface water itself. And I asked Elaine about water contamination from such a risky practice.
Well, of course, everybody knows about Waterton, Ontario, and the farmer was following the rules, so that was not his fault. However, the excess manure was there, and they had heavy rain, so the two things came together, and there's an area in central Manitoba, Tyndall area, and there's quite a large area there where the rivers and the water system is irreparably damaged from excess manure.
Ethical issues, antibiotic resistance, water contamination are just a few issues associated with factory production of hogs. Air pollution is another serious issue. As manure decomposes in lagoons, it emits over 400 volatile organic compounds, including nitrogen, hydrogen sulfide, and methane. Yet another key issue facing intensive livestock operations and hog factories is the incredible amount of water required by these facilities. And concern does not lie in how much these hogs drink on a daily basis, but lies in the amount of water used to clean the facilities, to wash away all the manure, and also that is required to add to the solid manure to make it more easily applied to fields. Now, according to Dr. William J. Weida of the Colorado College and director of the Grace Factory Farm Project, a hog can consume up to 15 liters of water per day. But add in all the other water requirements, and that number jumps to almost 55 liters per day. When these factories are located in rural areas that commonly rely on finite sources of water, this is certainly a serious issue. But taking a look at the Manitoba Pork Council's website, they don't seem to think so. On the site, one can find a publication geared towards students that is titled "The Dirt on Pigs and the Environment." And located in this publication is a small section on water requirements, and it reads this, and I quote, "Did you know the average Canadian uses 343 liters of water a day in our homes and gardens? The average pig uses approximately 7 liters of water each day," end quote. So there is quite the misleading comparison there, where here in this very paragraph, the Manitoba Pork Council compares daily use of water by humans to that of the water pigs drink, and does not include the water requirements for these factories as mentioned just previously. Now, the paragraph even goes on to suggest that it's difficult to compare pigs and people since pigs don't take showers or water their lawn. So I contacted the Manitoba Pork Council to speak with them on this and other issues discussed on today's broadcast, and they refused to return my phone calls. Their concern for these issues is obviously minimal. Now it is, for all these very issues just mentioned, that Elaine Hughes created the Stop the Hogs Coalition, and she explains how it all started.
Well, that formed about 3 years ago next month as direct result of us receiving a pretty little brochure in our mailbox that Big Sky Hogs was coming to town, and they were holding this information meeting. So this was the first any of us had heard of it. Of course, this is how it happens. Everybody hears about it, the Chamber of Commerce and the so-called stakeholders, they all know about it, and then the obligatory public consultation happens, and in turn we took a petition which resulted in 60% of the eligible voters signing the petition asking for a vote on this. The Reeve looked right at us and said, "We don't have to do anything with this." And I said, "Yeah, we know that, but in the meantime, this is still a democracy, so please sign here." And they signed, as the Reeve signed, as receiving this petition. And they immediately tabled it because they're damned if they do and they're damned if they don't. If they let the hog barn in, we'll be mad at them. If they don't let the hog barn in, then the supporters will be mad.
Elaine Hughes explains where their petition stands right now.
Right now, our petition is still tabled at the in the council minutes. As we speak, the government of Saskatchewan is reviewing and amending the Planning and Development Act, which concerns us a great deal because the last thing we heard about 3 weeks ago was that the stakeholders are trying to get the discretionary use amended so that even if our RM council says, no, you may not put a pig factory in our RM, they want to remove the no appeal clause and be able to take their case to friends in the government and say, but we want to have our pig factory there, so please do this. And we, the local people and the local government, will be able to do nothing.
Elaine explains if this controversy happens in every community across Canada when a hog factory is proposed.
This happens in every community where these things are set up. People have spent their life savings, their university registration fee for their kids. They've spent that money in court trying to keep these filthy things out of their community. One RM in Manitoba, not that long ago, they did vote on it, and the community, I think it was 92%, said no, which didn't mean anything. They didn't have to honor that, and the pig factory came in. Manitoba changed their planning act last year, so it's easier for operations to move in. Alberta was about a year and a half before that. They rejigged their regulations, so it's easier for them to come in. It smells like money, and it smells like lobbying, and we don't have any money. It's just us here.
In concluding my conversation with Elaine Hughes, she closed with these remarks.
This is not sustainable. This is not a humane way of raising animals. This is not farming. This is agribusiness, and it depends upon who your friends are, whether you get the agribusiness operation in your community or not. It has nothing to do with common sense. It has obviously very little to do with what the rest of the community wants. It's very, very dangerous, and nobody is listening. And it's so frustrating. And I don't know, with a new government, I don't know. Environment wasn't very big on the Conservative platform, so that's another thing to worry about.
And that was Elaine Hughes of the Saskatchewan-based Stop the Hogs Coalition. And you can find out more info at www.stopthehogs.com. Elaine is also on the steering committee of the Beyond Factory Farming Coalition. And you're tuned in to Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded in the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio in Nelson, British Columbia. My last guest on today's program is one that will provide a completely opposite approach to raising livestock for food, and in this case, pigs. And she is Barbara Schellenberg, who, located in Vancouver, is responsible for marketing pasture-to-plate meats, which are raised in the Cariboo region of British Columbia, in the community of Alexis Creek, not far from Williams Lake. In listening to my previous guests, the tone may seem as though all is hopeless, that raising food in a sustainable and ethical way is just too far from being a reality. But as Barbara will explain, this is not the case. There are many options out there, and only a little bit of effort is required to find them. And here's Barbara Schellenberg providing a background on her family's business.
The farm started around 1902. It was named the Ross Ranch. It was started by an Irish man who married a Native American lady. And it remained the Ross Ranch until my parents took over the farm 27 years ago and named it the Rafter 25. We're entering our third year of conversion to organic and biodynamic this year. We haven't been using any chemicals or conventional land and animal treatments for many years. We just decided to do the actual certification a few years ago. The farm encompasses about 3,500 acres, and we manage 150,000 acres of public lands. I was raised on the farm with my three sisters, and we all grew up there. Now I'm living in Vancouver, doing the marketing side of my family's business, and lots of educational stuff. I try to really get people to think about their food and where it comes from, rather than just buying it because it's organic, but actually thinking about why is it better.
Barbara mentioned the word biodynamics, and she explains what biodynamics is all about.
Biodynamics began in Europe many years ago. The ideas were developed by Rudolf Steiner. He was a visionary, very well known in Europe, and getting to be more well known here. His principles are based on understanding nature and how it works, not doing things because our grandfather did them that way, but actually thinking about what is it that the land needs.
As the farm is in a transition to becoming fully certified as a biodynamic farm, Barbara explains how the principles of biodynamics are applied on her farm.
Some practices we use are preparations and things that enhance the soil. The principle is based on that the soil gives life to everything and everything we use, so we take care of the soil. There will be no disease. And if your soil's in proper health, you don't have any problems. And we're really, really working towards that. And biodiversity is a huge thing as well. We have huge biodiversity of farm animals. We have the beef, bison, sheep, lamb, goats, chickens, llama. Basically everything you can have in our area. As well, we have lots of space for the wildlife. We're predator-friendly, so we have the guardian dogs that take care of the livestock. And that makes a nonviolent relationship between us and the wildlife and the predators. So that's a big part of biodynamics as well, is biodiversity and fitting in with what's already around you and not trying to change it but living with it.
As was mentioned earlier on the show, pigs raised in factories are fed a diet of drugs, metals, and grains while they spend their lives indoors, jammed together in pens, and in many cases spend their lives in cages. But this isn't the case on Barbara's farm.
They get lots of fresh milk from our dairy cows. They get some organic peas, which we soak and sprout for them. And then they roam around and eat grass. They have all summer, and in the spring they eat more roots. Summer they roam around with the cows and the horses and the buffalo. They've got hundreds of acres. They can just be wherever they want to and take care of themselves. So we feed them once a day. We go down with an ATV and bring them their milk and in their slop. The housing, they need shelter in the summertime from sunburn. They do quite a good job covering themselves with mud from all the puddles they find. We have hay bales that are covered with tarp that are very well insulated, keeps nice, cool shade. And as long as we have them fenced out so that the cattle don't eat the hay, it works really well. In the wintertime, we fill it more with hay and they actually burrow inside and keep themselves completely sheltered with probably about 8 to 10 feet of hay in every direction. So they're quite happy as far as housing is concerned.
One of the common reasons industry uses to justify the use of sow stalls, as mentioned earlier on the program, is that by caging pigs, it prevents them from fighting and injuring each other. Now, while Barbara mentions that on her farm, pigs are allowed to roam free, I asked whether fighting is a problem.
Animals naturally will fight to establish their pecking order, and once that's established, there really isn't a problem. They all hang out together. They're all looking out for each other all the time. We don't have the violence problem because they're properly fed. They have all the nutrients they need. And like with humans, we cause so many problems when we don't eat properly. It's the same goes for animals. And we don't have this problem. Animals will turn to cannibalism. A lot of animals will when they are missing nutrients in their body. They'll look to another body to fulfill those nutrients. Because our animals have everything they need, they don't have a tendency to do that. I remember last year one pig got shoved by the other pigs and broke his leg, but that's about the extent of it.
You're tuned in to Deconstructing Dinner, where we're presently hearing clips from a conversation I had with Barbara Schellenberg of Pasture to Plate Meats, a company located in Vancouver and raising animals on their farm in Alexis Creek, not far from Williams Lake. The disposal of manure was raised previously as being a major issue created by massive hog factories, and Barbara explains how manure is dealt with on her farm.
Well, it's deposited straight onto the land. Pigs are really, by any standard, the cleanest farm animal you can possibly have. If they're given the chance, they will never mess in their sleeping area. They're just amazingly clean. They're very concerned about their appearance, I guess, aside from bathing in mud. Like all the manure from all the animals, it becomes composted straight into the soil, and the microorganisms digest it. So there's actually no smell problem any time of the year.
And yet another issue raised when speaking of hog factories is the high volume of water required to operate these facilities. But that's not the case on Barbara Schellenberg's farm, and she explains.
The fuel fields that they roam in the summertime are irrigated, and so they get all their water from the puddles and things that are formed. We don't give them access to the ponds and things because that's wildlife habitat, but there's no actual water needed for cleaning facilities and things. In the springtime when they're having their babies, which is right now, actually we have two have already had their little ones. They're quite adorable. Then they're in a barn with a heat lamp for a couple weeks. They get to go outside during the day, and of course then there's some, you know, cleaning necessary, but nothing major, definitely nothing like you would see in a factory production.
My previous guest on the show today, Shiv Chopra, spoke of the risks associated with the abundant use of antibiotics in hog production and livestock production in general. Barbara explains whether antibiotics are required by the animals on her farm.
Because of organic standards, you can't, as well as with the biodynamic practices where you nourish the soil and that in turn takes care of your everything that you're growing. I can't remember the last time we had a pig that was sick. I remember when I was a little girl, we had our pet pig who had pneumonia, and that's about the last time I can recall. We don't use any antibiotics. We don't have any problems with common diseases, I guess, they get in factory farms, or foot rot, where the feet get tender and swell from the concrete and the manure, and eye infections are common in pigs. We don't have these problems because they have a lot of space, they get a lot of exercise, and they are not standing in their manure.
With all the environmental comparisons between factory hog production and that of a farm such as pasture to plate, we haven't spoke of the difference in nutritional quality between that final product of ham, sausage, bacon, or pork chops.
The way I try to explain it to my customers is maybe not so much on a scientific base of the nutritional values. What I value more as being important is you can imagine a poor little pig standing in a factory farm in a little pen where you can't turn around, and I've seen this, and it's very sad. Just even the energetics behind it and the diet they're fed, everything, it can't possibly, if you're not putting in positive input, you're not going to get something positive out with the pigs running around in the sunshine and chewing on anything they find as nutritional. You're putting in so much positive and so much good nutrients that it can't possibly not be healthy. There are nutritional write-ups about grass-fed pork. You do get a lot more of your nutrients, your vitamins, and beta-carotene, and it's much leaner. I don't have an example for pork, but I know a beef steak from a fat grass-fed cow has an 8-ounce steak has 100 less calories than an 8-ounce steak from a regular grain-fed cow, and that's just because they're exercising. They're actually using their muscles, and the muscle's not filling with fat. The meat is still very tender, but it's definitely from a healthy animal, and that makes all the difference to your health.
In wrapping up my conversation with Barbara, she did her best to illustrate over the phone the differences in appearance and taste between factory-raised pork and sustainably raised pork.
It's more prevalent in the beef where the fat is yellow or orange rather than white. In the pork, it's sort of a very buttery, a light yellow color, very soft, the pork fat. Commercially raised pork, the fat will be often really hard and unpalatable. And the fat from our pork is just, it's like butter. It's so soft and absolutely delicious. I don't know anyone who throws it out, but it'd be hard to think of someone who eats the fat from a commercial raised pork because it just doesn't taste good. Then again, our hams and our cured meats do look different in appearance because we don't use nitrates in curing, so they don't have that bright pink color.
And that was Barbara Schellenberg of Pasture to Plate Meats. Their animals are raised in Alexis Creek, British Columbia, and their products are available there and in Vancouver at 3215 Grant Street. You can find out more contact information on the Deconstructing Dinner website. One other resource to mention in sourcing out food that is raised and produced using sustainable and ethical methods is a website called the Eat Well Guide. And you can visit that website at www.eatwellguide.org. It's a North American-wide resource with many Canadian links. And that was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded in the studios of Nelson, British Columbia's Kootenai Co-op Radio. I've been your host, John Steinman. I thank my technical assistant, Diane Matanko. All of those affiliated with this station are volunteers, and financial support for this station is received through membership, donations, and sponsorship from local businesses and organizations. Should you have any comments about tonight's show, want to learn more about topics covered, or want to listen to any segments of this broadcast again, you can visit the website of Deconstructing Dinner at www.cjly.net/deconstructingdinner. Till next week.